From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 13th day of April, 2017. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Quick reminder, the markets are closed for Good Friday tomorrow. A bit later in our program today, we'll discuss the agricultural cash grain markets with Matt Bennett of Bennett Consulting, Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois. And we'll wrap up our time together today with Mike Tenura, as usual, from T-Storm Weather in Chicago, with a look at the rainfall coming to the Midwest and the Corn Belt, and what's been happening in Argentina, more rain coming there too. And it all happens right here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
We're joined now by Dan Zwicker. He's at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas, to take a look at the trade in Chicago for the day. Thanks, Dan, for being with us. It's been a couple of good days for the soybeans. What's been moving the marketplace?
Well, I think last week's Commodity Week bearish program put a bottom in the market. We need to have more of those. I hope you got a good bearish one on this afternoon. Maybe we can keep this thing going. I think, as I mentioned last week, even on Commodity Week, that the soybean market was terribly oversold. It has been as oversold technically as it usually gets before some kind of technical bounce begins to take hold. And that's exactly, I think, what has happened this week. We're closing the week out with a nice weekly reversal to the upside. And we've gained enough this week that we're actually ahead for the month. So depending upon how the next 2 weeks goes, soybeans may end up closing out the month of April with a monthly reversal to the upside. And if that would be the case, that would tell you that the underlying fundamental picture that everybody's been talking about over the past winter is changing somewhat. I think probably the key here is the planting season. I know we got a long ways to go, and there's no need to be panicking yet. But if you do, if this spring wetness would continue, that would, I think, tee up the odds that we would have smaller acreage numbers come out of the June report. It's been my observation when you get into a wet type spring, not all those acres get planted. Now, when you're in a dry spring, all the little bottom, creek bottom ground, river bottom ground, everything gets planted because they're able to get in there. When you get into a wet spring, you have a tendency to lose acres. And I've always told my clients that, you know, if we're not planting corn, we're not planting soybeans either. And as bearish as the trade has been over the past couple months, you would have thought we were going to go to zero this week. Instead, we ended up posting in a pretty good rally. Looking at my cyclical work, I think soybeans, by closing out the week with a weekly reversal to the upside, I think that tells us that we've got a 38 to 42 week cycle low in place. And if that is the case, then we may be in a period here having some pretty good strength as we go on into May and June, which would be very seasonal in nature. June, upwards of over half the soybean highs are made during the month of June. So it does kind of tee us up now maybe for a more seasonal climb into June. Corn posted a weekly reversal up 2 weeks ago. Last week we had the downer, and now this week we've turned around and we've closed out the week higher. We didn't have no reversal, but the higher close, I think, negated last week's reversal down and solidified that weekly reversal up that we made a couple weeks ago. So I think cyclically, too, corn now is in position to, I think that's a stretched out 20-week cycle low, and I think corn now is in position to strengthen as we go on, you know, into the normal seasonal time frame of seeing higher prices. So I have to be real encouraged with what I saw technically. We've got the gold market skyrocketing. We've got inflation starting to pick up now. We got the dollar looking like it's kind of rolling down. We've got the stock market. It looks like it's starting to roll down. And then with all the bombing going on, that beats war drums all over. So that has a tendency to provide support to commodities clear across the board. So I think all in all, the commodity complex is finishing out the week very strong and very positive.
Okay, so here's a very important question, and not about new crop, because that's where we've been standing at the moment, but about old crop corn that's in the bin, and there's a whole lot of it. If there's a pause in the action next week and the week after, if the rains continue to come, should farmers take advantage of the higher prices and market at least a bit more of the corn that they've stored?
Well, I learned a long time ago, never talk a farmer out of selling, because usually there's a reason why he wants to sell or needs to sell. It's mostly because he needs to sell, but he hasn't really told you the full story yet, whether it's his banker breathing down his back or his wife breathing down his back. But I would suggest, yes. I don't know if you'd want to do it right away, but if we do begin to get into a period of strength where the market begins to think we're going to lose some corn acres, and then we're tightening up U.S. supplies, that'll put the greatest strength in the old crop months. That'll be the thing that I'll want to watch. If this up move continues, is that the strength comes into the front months. You want a bull spread market. That is a true bullish market. And that would tell you that the end users that have been sitting on the bench have decided to come forward to extend their coverage in the marketplace. And it could offer farmers a much better pricing opportunity than what we were thinking a week ago or even maybe 3 months ago. So I do think farmers always need to be on the outlook for a nice pop. Now, the thing that they have to be a little careful of, and that's going to depend upon location, and I know we have a wide listening audience from west to east and north to south in this Corn Belt, but basis levels could widen on a good rally in futures. So they may want to kind of do a two-step, maybe go with a basis contract, and then that locks in the basis, and then they're advanced. Then as the futures goes up, they've got that basis locked in. So, but I don't want to advise that to someone that doesn't know how to do one of those. You definitely need some guidance on doing that. But that's the only thing that I would worry about, is if this market would decide to take off because of dimming new crop prospects. I think the basis levels would widen, especially in corn and wheat, because that is the one that we've got the most of, and that's in farmers' hands. So that would be something that they need to watch pretty careful.
Justin, by way of explanation for those who are thinking about this, if you believe that the basis would widen between now, let's say now, and sometime in the future, but maybe we're out 2 weeks from now when we might have more of a pop in the marketplace for corn. If you believe that your basis might get widened, you would lock that in and then wait for a higher price later and then go ahead and market. But in that process, you probably sold your corn or at least lost ownership of it in the process of making that basis contract as well. Do you think that the widening basis would be more likely in the Western Corn Belt or in the Eastern Corn Belt?
Probably the Western Corn Belt. That is where they probably run the greatest risk. The Eastern Corn Belt, I mean, we're fortunate being in the Eastern Corn Belt is because we have the river markets and the export markets to move a lot of inventory. We also have a lot of big processing plants in the Eastern Corn Belt. And then we have a lot of grain in the Eastern Corn Belt that moves into the Southeast poultry and pork market. So that is, I would say that the greatest risk of basis widening is going to be in the western and northwestern parts of the growing region where they don't have maybe access to all of those end user demand types. The West, a lot of that corn goes down into the Texas Panhandle for feedlots or Kansas, and then it goes in maybe to ethanol, but they lose a lot in the export market in those areas where we have that in the Eastern Corn Belt with the river systems.
Any seasonals of concern at this time?
No. Seasonally, if anything, I would say if the corn planters do start rolling, and we know they are rolling in a few areas, but a lot of times that gives soybeans a little extra boost kind of into that May 10th, May 15th area, because it's always assumed that if the corn planters are rolling, farmers always like to plant corn, so they may plant more corn than what they intended to if they're able to go. So that might be a seasonal that people that have soybeans or looking at a place to maybe add to some soybean sales as strength into that May 10th timeframe. As far as full-fledged weather concern markets in the spring, it's been my observation, and of course each year is different, but it seems around May 20th, give or take a few days, is when the trade kind of assesses the planting progress to that point and what crop prospects look at that point. Come May 20th, if we're looking around and we only have maybe 65% of the corn planted, maybe only 25% of the soybeans planted, the market will probably take notice of that. And that would be a catalyst then for the market to rally on into June, because it would be betting that we would have a large portion of those corn and soybean acres may not make it to the planting and get planted. Like I talked earlier, when you get into wet springs, not all the acres have a tendency to get planted.
Thank you so much for taking so very much time with me today, Dan. We appreciate it.
Very well, Todd.
And of course, Dan Zwicker, he is with Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas, joins us here on the Closing Market Report. In today's agricultural news, there is no shortage of ag policy issues that await Sonny Perdue when he finally is confirmed to his post as ag secretary, but there's one nutrition issue that's flown under the radar, whether states should be allowed to ban certain foods or drinks from the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP. In February, Maine renewed its request to USDA seeking approval to block sugar-sweetened beverages and candy from being purchased with SNAP benefits. Maine, like other states, is experiencing experienced an alarming epidemic of obesity and other weight-related diseases such as type 2 diabetes, which can be prevented with reduced consumption of sugar. The fate of that request will ultimately be up to Perdue, and it's anyone's guess where he'll land on that issue. Republicans tend to favor giving states more flexibility in lieu of federal mandates, but some in the party are very leery of defining what's healthy and what's not. The state's request appears to have begun working its way through the process at USDA, if slowly. The department has already sent Maine a letter seeking more information about its proposal. Well, this news on a name you may be familiar with, Chuck Connor, who served as Deputy Secretary at USDA during the George W. Bush administration, said Wednesday that he is not looking to return to his old job at USDA. "I served as the second in command for USDA and have no interest. I want to continue to represent farmer-owned cooperatives in the country," he said on the sidelines of the Consumer Federation of America's National Food Policy Conference. Connor, who has been president and CEO of the National Council of Farmer Cooperatives since 2009, was a key member of Trump's Agricultural Advisory Committee and a top ag surrogate for Trump during the campaign. Well, let's stay in Washington, D.C., but we'll look to the FDA, or the Food and Drug Administration, which is extending the comment period on a pair of initiatives related to genome editing in plants and animals following requests from seed and biotech groups. In notices set for publication in the Federal Register today, the FDA says it will give another 90 days for groups to weigh in, bumping the deadline from April 19 to June 19 for the draft guidance on regulation of intentionally altered genomic DNA in animals and the information request for use of genome editing to produce new plant varieties for food. The documents, which clarify requirements for makers of GMO animals and seek input on the potential safety risk of food derived from genome-edited crops, were released 2 days before the Obama administration left office. The American Seed Trade Association and the Biotechnology Innovation Organization petitioned the FDA for more time in a letter this month. And finally today, earlier this week, frozen sweet peas sold under the Season's Choice brand at Aldi stores in 7 states, including Iowa, Illinois, Ohio, West Virginia, Kentucky, Florida, and Wisconsin, were voluntarily recalled. Listeria is a particularly concerning pathogen that University of Illinois Extension nutrition and wellness educator Mary Liz Wright says should especially be avoided by pregnant women. However, Wright says there are some easy ways to make sure frozen peas are listeria-free.
And so the concern with the recall on frozen peas, particularly now as it's spring and people are thinking about making salads, we need to cook those frozen vegetables before we add them to a cold salad. Listeria can be killed at 155 degrees, so bringing the peas up to 155 degrees will kill the listeria, and then you can safely chill them and then use them in your salad.
U.S. government reports pregnant women are 20% more likely to contract listeria. It can lead to miscarriage. Lakeside Foods says the 16-ounce packages of Season's Choice frozen sweet peas were potentially contaminated. The product has already been removed from store shelves. Consumers should either throw the frozen peas they purchased away or return them for a full refund. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. This is the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media for this Thursday afternoon. I'm UofI Extension's Todd Gleason, joined now by Mike Tenura. He's at T-Storm Weather in Chicago. Mike, thanks for being with us. There have been some tractors, planters running in our area, although I take it that we're due for some more wet weather.
Illinois is under the gun for some thunderstorms come later this weekend, especially on Sunday and into Monday. The larger concern, though, is that once we get beyond that period, there's a number of large systems that will move across the U.S. next week. That should bring a lot of rain to a lot of different areas. And because of that, the general forecast is for widespread coverage of heavy rain in nearly all corn, soybean, spring wheat, and winter wheat areas over the next 10 to 14 days. So the bottom line here is that we're going to turn quite a bit wetter, and we should stay wet into the very end of the month.
How much rainfall do you think, and are there particular areas that will be wetter than others across the Corn Belt?
Well, the most likely area to receive heavy rainfall of 2 to 4 inches is generally centered right on the Corn Belt. So we would say from Illinois over to Iowa, and then stretching south and west through Missouri and into Kansas and Oklahoma. That's where the heaviest rainfall is most likely, and that's simply because no matter which exact path these upcoming storm systems take, they'll tend to affect that area no matter what happens. Once you move away from that region, there will still be rain at times and even some heavy rain, but we're more comfortable with 1.25 inches to 2.5 inches of rain surrounding that over the next 2 weeks.
We always watch it when the El Nino reports come out. It was released yesterday. Did it have anything interesting in it?
Well, it's pretty much the same story. We were in a La Nina a few months ago, and we're more than likely in the transition to an El Nino for the end of this year. We've seen that happen 10 different times since 1960, and U.S. corn and soybean yields were generally above trend in those years, though there were some exceptions. 3 times we had a poor corn crop, and 2 times we had a poor soybean crop. It's hard to say which scenario we're in right now. The only thing we do know is that we're starting wet, and that's always a little bit of a dicey situation. But we all know that it's weather later in the summer that truly matters for yield potential.
Move your way southward. Last year, the Argentines had a difficult time with some flooding as they proceeded through their harvest season. They had some rainfall over the weekend. Are they going to stay wet?
The northern areas will stay wet, but those northern areas have not really been under the region of concern lately. We've been concerned about what's happening in southern areas of Argentina, especially Buenos Aires and La Pampa. Many of these areas received more than 6 inches of rain over the last 2 weeks, with some areas having received more than 12 inches of rain. That includes Junin and Santa Rosa. Those are in some of the key regions that we are monitoring all the time for corn and soybean development. So their harvest or their growing season is wrapping up. Harvest is beginning, and they were pounded by heavy rainfall. Whether or not that is an issue remains to be seen, but we suspect that there's been some significant flooding in parts of Argentina in recent weeks.
That's Mike Tenora. He's with T-Storm Weather out of Chicago, Illinois. Joined us here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason.